This is the Living Fearless Today podcast, a show that helps men like you and me who are struggling to get unstuck and overcome fear to live confidently and courageously. I'm your host and transformation coach, Mike Forrester, helping you create the change you want now. Join me as I interview men who've conquered their challenges and soared to success as they spill their secrets on how they live fearless today. Well, hello and welcome back, my friend. And this week I'm joined by Sean Robinson. And Sean and I are going to get into the fact of the sobriety journey that he's been on. He's an author of an amazing book, Going Dry. And he talks about habitual alcoholism, like habitual drinking. And I mean, how many of us start out on something casually and we just don't realize until it is an actual habit? And it's like, oh, I'm no good at habits, but here I have this habit that's unhealthy for me. It's detrimental to my relationships, my thoughts, my actions, everything around me. Well, Sean and I are going to get into his sobriety journey. We're going to get into journaling, which is an activity that helped him to, you know, get onto that healthy path. And I think a lot of us, when we look at journaling, just go, oh, he's writing in his diary. No, not at all. It is much deeper than that. And you're going to see it from Sean's story here. And then we're also going to get into like generational trauma. Sean and I have talked about this, and it's like, you know, we both swore I'll never be like my dad. And yet we very much ended up on that path behaving just like it had been patterned to us. And it's something that happens to a lot of us as men, you know, both friends and clients find themselves and are like, what the heck? How did I end up here? You know, it's almost like when you drive home, you're fully exhausted. You don't remember how you got home. Same kind of thing. So we're going to delve into that. Sean is just a great, great man. Really loving our conversation beforehand. And so looking forward to this one. Sean, how are you doing today, my friend?
Hey, Mike. I'm doing great. Appreciate being here. And that's a great intro. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, our conversation, it was one of those that it's like, we often will tell ourselves that lie. This is who I am. I can't change. I'm just me. And your story and the work that you've done, you know, in yourself, and, you know, that transformation, dude, you're proving that it's like, you're a testimony that things can change. We don't have to stay how we are, who we are, or believing those lies that we've built up, right? To become the comfort, even though it's unhealthy. So, dude, I appreciate you joining me. Thank you, Sean.
Yes, thank you. No, you're right. That was my biggest excuse for so long, was this is just who I am. And I used that as much as I could because it was easy. It was the best way for me to just brush everything else off and not have to fix anything, not have to change, because people just left it alone. This is just who I am. And then I could be stubborn and not talk about it and end it there. And until I learned that that was not helping me in any way, and that I very much could do something about it, I could change. Did I really, really regret using that for so long?
Yeah, it's almost normalized. We find it acceptable and convenient, so we don't push it, because I think a lot of us are believing it. So I don't want to push you on your belief, because it might come back on me, you know, is often kind of that boundary or that unspoken, pass, right? I don't want to talk about what I'm doing, because if I push on you, then you'll push on me. And I'm just not ready for that, Sean. Mm. So, well, let's jump into, what does life look like for you today on the professional side of life?
Professional side, I was a construction electrician. I still am, but I've found my way to an electrical project manager. So more estimating and managing projects now, worked my way up to that point. Still on the fire department. I just passed my 20-year anniversary. I was a volunteer firefighter. And professionally, I'm just trying to make sure I have as much time with my family and my kids, and that I spend more time planning that they get the most of me too.
Hmm. Dude, that is what it's all about, right? I mean, I think as dads really want to engage with our kids in a way that for many of us wasn't something we received. So hats off to you, man. That's awesome.
Thank you.
What does life look like personally for you?
Personally, the last few years have been so transformative for me, and personally, things are great right now. My kids are getting the best version of me. My wife's getting the best version of me. I'm giving that back to myself. I've got a completely different attitude towards most things now. I'm more patient. It very much was not this way just a short time ago, the end of 2020. And I would have never thought that I'd be here talking to you about this or anybody, because that wasn't the way that I was. The person that was 3 years ago, he wasn't that person. And I've learned so much. My kids, they definitely get the best version of me, and there's a lot of moments that I really appreciate now that I wouldn't have paid attention to before.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking on our children, let's kind of back into this in the fact of, like, you're showing up now as the dad you want to, the dad you didn't have. And you and I talked about this, and I was like, dude, I swore I would never end up like my father, right? Like, there was nothing in me that even wanted to be like him. And if you had said, hey, Mike, what's your relationship with your dad? It was, for me, horrible. And again, I swore I wouldn't be him. But Sean, I found myself being on that same path and behaving in that same way, treating my kids in the same way I hated being treated. It sounds like you were very much kind of having that same experience where it's like you found yourself, like there was a realization, right? Like, mm-hmm. similar to what I had, where it's like, holy crap, this is not the path I set out on. How did you, like, what triggered you to that realization to say, like, oh wow, I am on the path of becoming like my dad? And, you know, even though you swore it off, how did you end up there, or like coming to that awareness?
Well, I didn't realize that I was on that path. And, you know, I did say, you know, I'm never going to be like this. I don't like this. But like growing up, I had that example. Like, my dad was a mechanic and treated things a certain way. He lost his dad when he was very young, so the father figure may not have been there the way that he would have liked it to. But, you know, he had an attitude. He was very impatient. There was drinking. There was an environment that yelling and screaming and walking on. We were walking on eggshells all the time. I say we, my two younger brothers, and being the oldest of that, and the way that, like, Ed Milet speaks about his dad's environment when he was younger, and like getting that sixth sense for how the keys went in the door, what version was going to walk through. And like, I grew up living that. Like, dad was a mechanic and worked outside, was in the garage, and like had a lot of friends over and drinking, and like what was going to come in the house at the end of the day was one version of another. We didn't really know. So growing up in that environment, that was the example that I had. And like, I knew how to mix Ryan Coke or mixed drinks when I was like 8, 9 years old. And as innocent, it was just like helping, you know. It was something that I could do to help dad in the garage, or help dad, like mom or dad. Like, they were married when they were 20. I was born at 20. They were 21, and they just had young lives. They had young family or young friends, and party environment, people around all the time. And there was a bit of a game with counting how many cans were left after a function and getting them ready for the, you know, to go back to the store to buy more. And a lot of that drinking environment that I grew up with was part of the habits that I found myself creating later, keeping a stocked fridge and being the host and staying up to be the last one awake and, you know, encouraging other people, oh, have one more. And working, like, I'm a construction electrician and my dad mechanic, so he would often work for buddies and they'd pay him in beers and bottles of booze. And, you know, I got to a point where like, I was like, oh, I don't want your money. I just buy me a beer, or a case of beer, and we're even. And, you know, getting all of those to a point, like I became that impatient person. I became that yeller. I became that like version. And I don't even think I saw it coming. I think it just, the environment that I had, the exposure, the teaching, the learning, all the things I thought were to be true about what I was learning from my dad to how I was supposed to be a dad, it just wasn't correct. And I didn't know any different. So when I realized that I'd become that person that was yelling and impatient and, you know, grabbing my kids' arms and walking them down the hall and yelling at them without thinking about what I was yelling at them for, or realizing that whatever it was, wasn't a big deal overall, it was eye-opening, and I really did not enjoy what I was becoming and needed a change.
Yeah. That realization right there is one of those that it's when it occurs, we're given a chance, continue on that same path or choose to be different, right? To mm-hmm. to almost pioneer and figure out what kind of dad do I want to be. Did you know, like, I know you knew what you didn't want to be, but did you know the type of dad that you wanted to become?
I didn't know. There was, like, I had friends and stuff. Like, I could see different environments being at their house, and there was differences, and I didn't really know why or how. Like, it just, and then I grew up with a different attitude, like, oh, that's just what they do. That's what those people do. And I didn't really think that was normal, right? I thought maybe we had normal. So to compare and think that one was better than the other, I think I felt more judgment towards people that had that, maybe that, you know, fancy lifestyle, or did got along, or didn't yell at each other, or, you know, had that like dedicated family time. And it was like, I didn't know that we were the wrong side of it. You know, it felt more like, so I didn't know to look up to any version. It was like, you know, that's not what I'm used to. So that's wrong. Not what I was doing was wrong.
Yeah. Now you shared earlier when we were talking, you had a situation just tonight, and it's like where you would have reacted in the old way, you chose to take a healthy, like more aware reaction to it. Do you mind sharing like what happened, and then reflect on how you shared, like how you responded tonight versus how you would have responded before?
Yes, absolutely. So as I was talking to you off air, just tonight, my wife was out and my 8-year-old was washing his hands, and he was using my ensuite bathroom, washing his hands in the small sink, and he forgot to turn the sink off. So he came out after that, and we were having dinner, just pizza night, and my older young lad, so he's 10, he went and he's like, is this sink on? And he finds this sink overflowing with water, steps across the water, turns it off, but it's like overflowing water everywhere. It's leaking already down into the basement. The ceiling tiles, thankfully it's not drywall, the ceiling tiles are already on the floor, just soaked. And I would have absolutely lost my mind. It would have been everything, slamming towels, slamming doors, pushing chairs out of the way, getting kids out of the way, just like absolutely mind blown that this had happened, and would have handled it, you know, that way. But tonight, as I've worked towards this, because it's not a light switch, this has been like through, you know, actual working through whole, just monitoring how I react and changing. I maybe opened the closet door to grab the towels a little aggressively, but I wasn't yelling. I was going down the hall. I was placing the towels. I was asking the older boy to look after my 3-year-old daughter, just, you know, put her tablet or get her out of the way so she's not walking through this water. And I was calm enough. I'm talking to my 8-year-old who would have been cowering, you know, in another room or downstairs, just hiding from me and all that chaotic commotion. but he was there with me and I'm patting this water. I'm cleaning it up. I'm talking to him about the mistake that he'd made. Do you understand why this happened? And really calmly working through him. He was there with me the whole time and he was looking at me and I could see it in his eyes, like, who is this person? Like, why are you not yelling at me? Why are you not like, why am I not in my bed already? Like, he was looking at me like just blown away that I was handling it this way and calmly helping him clean this up and taking the bag of towels down to the wash and putting them in the wash. And now we found the mess downstairs and cleaning that up. And the way that I would have handled that before and the way that I've worked through handling it now is not only better for him, obviously, but like I've left that interaction proud of the way that, that I've handled it and knowing that he probably won't leave the sink on again. Whereas next time he may leave that sink on by accident out of fear because he's more worried about something else, maybe worried about something else I'm freaking out about instead of that moment. So, you know, we do what we can in the moments we have, but that was something, like you said, just happened tonight that really is a testament to the work that I'm putting in to be different than I used to be.
Yeah, dude, it's so powerful. And my hats off to you because, I mean, you've obviously done the work. You're working to set a different pattern and a different expectation. I mean, when I started to change, my kids had that same relearning almost, like looking at me, it's kind of like they did with you. Like, did an alien abduct you? What happened to my dad? Like, I should be in trouble in a different way. And, man, I think that creates like a different environment, one in which when our kids do have those situations that come up and as they grow older, you know, those situations are going to change in intensity and the type of stuff that they get into. We can still be that place that's like the safe harbor almost to come back and talk and not be like, you know, the raging father that, you know, is like, why were you so stupid?
Mm. And it helps set it up because I was handling that situation differently in the past because that's the way I was used to seeing it. So if I can show him and my other kids through my own actions, what, like how I'm changing dealing with it, then that gives them a different way to handle it because they can see that even though it's as chaotic and messy as this water mess was tonight, we don't have to be upset. We don't have to yell. We don't have to be scared. We can just clean up the mess and then we can go back to what we're doing and, you know, make sure we know why it happened, but move on.
Yeah. It's not that life ending, dictatorial, you know, fear that's coming at them. So dude, hats off to you again. That's stellar. Just proof of the testament. We can change and that the belief that we'll buy into of this is just who I am is a false one, right? Do have the power to change. And you've just shown us that. Let's go back to, like in Going Dry, you had talked about it being like habitual, right? As far as the drinking, the alcoholism, did the habit get formed right away? Or did it start out like as a thing of social drinking just because that was like, you know, you're talking about mixing drinks at 8. So you're around the alcohol. Was it just a normative thing or did it start out as a habitual thing?
No, it was a normal thing. There was abundance. It was such a social thing. And it just seemed so normal. It didn't seem to me that it was such a toxic thing or could be such a toxic thing. And in that environment, like, you know, I wasn't up all night. My brothers, we weren't up all night seeing like, you know, them getting drunk and whatever with their buddies. It was like they were out late, but we were in bed at whatever time. And, you know, the belligerent part of the night, maybe we were sheltered from. So it wasn't, you know, terrible in that way, but there was always booze around and it always seemed like that was the way it just had to be. So as I got older, you know, at one point in college, I worked at a liquor store in Ontario And, you know, it was a seasonal thing. So summer, when all the summer drinks came out, and winter, Christmas time, when all that festive stuff. And I was in this point where like, oh, I got to try that. And I got to try that. And I got to get that because it comes with a little thing on the case. And it was like, I just had that habitual, that abundance trained into me as I grew up. And then I got to that point where I couldn't go camping without having, you know, a good stocked cooler and then a bunch more just in case. And then, you know, maybe we're making a trip back to the beer store, whatever, the next day. And then there's just concerts and different social functions and different, because it's Friday night or because I just cut the grass or barbecuing, like the way, like, you know, all the advertising and all the commercials have you, like the drinks are there at the patios. Like it was like every moment from those commercials where I was in and from like those social elements, I just had that habit of having one. It was like, oh, I gotta have a drink now because everybody else is, or because it's Friday. So I created that version. And then it was like, I got to a point where, and COVID, the first year of COVID only made it worse because, you know, we couldn't go anywhere, but you could always get liquor and beer. So I got to that point where it was like, I was chasing that person I remembered in, you know, in my 20s or 19, 20, 21, where, you know, the buzz hits differently and you just, you know, having fun at the bar and you know everybody. And it's like, I was looking for that feeling subconsciously, and then I'd surpass it because I just maintained that pace all night and be on some kind of mission. And while I didn't feel like I had to have it every day, like if I went to a function and like the habit of how I carried myself at that function, and the fact that my wife lived with three young kids and she wasn't drinking through pregnancy, she wasn't drinking through breastfeeding. So that period, like there was a lot of times I was able to drink because she wasn't. So I was like, oh, okay, well, if you're not going to, I'm going to. So I automatically took that in mind that I could do it. So developing that habit to the point through with COVID, like I was mixing drinks with other mixed drinks. Like it was getting much worse. And we were doing Zoom drinking parties with my friends. So you're not even leaving your house after work and then doing these things in the evening and, you know, rinse and repeat. So, and even the fire department, a volunteer, like I never mixed the two, but like, we weren't even doing training for a while. They had stopped training because of COVID. And then even the calls that we would go to, it was like they really vetted whether or not they needed us there because of what this virus was. So like, there was just a lot more opportunity stuck at home to, you know, drink more. So at the end of 2020, it was like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. And you'd been drinking for like two decades. I think you were 36 when like, you're like, I'm done. Right. So when you look back over those two decades, what do you see that, you know, was the drinking just because of a habit, or was it also helping to, cope and medicate with like internal thoughts and, you know, conflicts or stuff like that? Was like, where did it fall for you?
I think it was a mix. I think there was definitely some coping. There was definitely some you know, hiding and using it a bit for that. But there was absolutely a habit portion, and just because that's what I was used to doing. And then coming from construction, it was like an expectation on Monday that everybody was going to have these drinking and hangover stories from the weekend. It was like that's what we talked about in the lunch trailer, and that was what happened. You know, you went out for drinks with the guys from work after, you know, especially on a Friday. So like the social element and the expectation from the circles that I was in was also a big part of it. And just enjoying that environment. And yeah, it really was, I think, an accumulation of all these things. And even though I didn't feel like I was coming from an addiction space, you know, cause in the moment, like I really just started as a break to not drink. It was just taking a break from drinking, and I can get back to that. But it was, I would learn later there was more addiction around it and more things I was doing like that drinking volume or like that mission. I call it mission drinking, where I was on a mission to get, you know, wasted or whatever. And it was like, that was just something I did when we were out somewhere. It wasn't usually because it was a Monday or Tuesday night, but if we were going to a function, like I was going prepared.
Yeah. Make sure you got enough stocked up, right? Focused on the goal. So when you hit that point and you decided, hey, I'm done with drinking, you also made the decision, hey, I'm going to get myself into a different place physically, right? Addressing your health on the physical side. You were at over 300 pounds and you're now down over 100 pounds. Like, you're rocking the boat, I guess is the best way to put it, right? We're within our social circles, our friends, our family. They're used to us as one person and behaving a certain way. Just like, you know, we talked earlier about you being a dad before, now your kids getting used to who you are at this point. How did your friends and family react to you making that decision? And how did you stay sold out to it in light of their reactions?
It was a transition. In the beginning, nobody knew that I was dealing with this. And I think it's common. Like, people just don't know what we're dealing with. So I wasn't sharing, and they didn't realize what kind of struggle I was having with it. And when I started with the dry January, kind of got to the point where I'm going to start not drinking, I'm going to do January. It was a bit easier in the beginning because there was more people doing their own version of a New Year's resolution. So to just not drink starting January or not do whatever, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, January, cool. But by like mid-January, when other people, and the way I used to be, resolutions never worked. I didn't know why. I thought this time was different. But other people were like, oh, I'm good. You know, 2 weeks, that's good. I made it. Oh, but you're still going? Like, why are you still going? You're like, okay, cool. So then I was like, well, like, I really needed it this time. And like my weight loss, like I was up and down. It's a lot of dieters do, you know, the yo-yo diet, you lose, you gain, you lose, you gain. Like, I've done that my whole life. So it was like, I need to get better in a bunch of different ways. It all started as a lifestyle thing. That 320 pounds I was at, I just needed something to change to get healthier there. And I thought alcohol was the best thing to do. It made sense. Dry January, the marketing for that kind of worked, because it's like I was feeling miserable after Christmas season with, you know, how much I kind of drank. And it's like, you know, yeah, I need a break. So going through that, and after January, when I made it to the end of the month and the people didn't believe that I did that long, they're like, you're going to do February too? And I started to do dry February, and they're like, and it was like, it blew people away that like, I'm continuing to just not be this person I used to be, not drink because I was doing this. And as I started to learn more about habits and structure and started to, you know, read some books and listen to books and podcasts, it was like, you know, 100 days, I'm going to do this for 100 days. And as people started to learn, and I started to convince people around me that this is what I was becoming, like, I did run into a lot of issues. Like, my brother asked me, because I turned a beer down at his place. He said, oh, well, you don't have your coin yet, you can't have a beer. And I was like, well, no, like, don't be like that. You don't have to make that comment. But like, it isn't about coins for me. It was not about that. Like, and to say that to me was so insensitive. But that was an example of the version I got. And I needed to convince myself what I was working on to feel confident enough to convince the people around me, if I felt like I needed to convince them, just that I meant it this time, or that this was important to me this time. So when I turned a drink down, and there was a time, like, I brought a bottle of whiskey over to my buddy's place because the wives were away, and it was like, you know, the guys were going to go bring the kids over and spend time in the backyard. I brought a bottle of whiskey over just so I didn't have to take any crap because I wasn't drinking. It's like, they're not going to give me a hard time if I brought the bottle for them. Right. So it was, yeah. And I mean, I was always kind of one to buy my round too, like, even though I wasn't drinking, and part of just being in the group, it was like, you know, I still want to be included. But like it definitely took some buy-in. It took some convincing to get the people around me to not give me such a hard time, but then to accept it. And I kind of said, and I don't mean any insensitivity to the statement at all, but like if I had been mandated to make a change, it almost would have been easier for the group around me to leave me alone about it. But because I decided on my own to make some sort of change, and that was the decision I made, was to just not drink anymore or for that time, it was like I had to convince everybody that it was important to me before they'd take me seriously with it.
Yeah. So you had mentioned like you've tried to stop before, you know, like, you know, hey, it's a new year, new expectations, right? New rules. What was different about that time when you look at having made that decision versus when you'd made the decision before?
I had like a whole compounding of that generational stuff we talked about, the attitude I had with my wife, my kids, coworkers, like just people around me, myself, that I started that journal at the end of 2020, and just the things I said about myself, the way I felt, because that dieting and weight was up and down and then up, like I just felt miserable and was no self-confidence whatsoever. Wanted to be better at the fire department, like that kind of weight, it was definitely holding me back there. And then just wanting to be more active, I had no energy for anything. Like my kids were young, like I have 3 under 10 and they were 3 years ago. So my daughter was just born. She was just a couple months old when I started making changes. And I just was not proud of the person I was, and just needed something. And this like built up was what really made me want that January to work. It wasn't about I'm up through almost 3 years right now, but it was never about this kind of duration in the beginning. It was just January. It was just that first month. And then I'd figure it out after, right? I didn't even know what I was doing in the beginning, other than I just needed a change. I needed something. So January was like it was important to me, despite the people around me, to make sure I got to that 30 days, to make sure that I could reevaluate this at the end of the month. But for now, like whatever everybody else is doing, I was making sure that I did this for that month.
Yeah. It's almost like those small steps, right? And as you find success, you're adjusting. You know, it's not like you're going, I'm going to go 3 years without a drink. Like you talked about, dry January turned into dry February, turned into 100 days. You know, it's how do you find success and momentum along the way? Mm-hmm. I love the way that you've, you know, lengthened it and continued to challenge yourself through it as you were starting out. It wasn't some, you know, insurmountable goal. It was, this is challenging. Oh, hey, I've made progress. I'm successful here. What else can I do? And you're stretching yourself in, you know, the journey, which is awesome. I think too often we set ourselves up for something that it's unobtainable. It's outside of what we believe we can even do. Whereas it's like, yeah, dry January, that's going to be a challenge, but you did it. Mm-hmm. And then continued to move forward. So you talked about journaling, which was something you started out, as a habit, right? You know, you had the habits of drinking and going about, you know, not doing the things that put you in a healthy state. You then got to that point of frustration, and journaling was something you began doing. How did you like think about journaling? Like, how did that come to your mind as far as, an activity? And then what did it look like for you in actually doing the journaling in the beginning?
Well, it was something I was aware of. I mean, I know that some people do it, you know, and we girls in public school, they kept diaries, right? And we're construction in a very toxic masculine space. And know, if any man was keeping a journal, my buddies, if they found out I was keeping a journal, it would have been, you know, it was all Sean's keeping a little diary. So I didn't tell anybody. But when I was at home, that led me to that. And I was that person at the end of 2020 and feeling so miserable. You know, my wife was an outlet for me, and she was hearing me say some pretty nasty things about myself and how I felt about myself, and just overall negativity towards everything. You know, her brother would get a promotion at work, or it didn't matter, whoever would get this something happen, and I'd be, you know, cynical and negative about it because for some reason their success meant something to me. You know, why can't I have that? Like, it was just awful. So like, I was aware of how I was, but I needed a different outlet. And because I was aware of journaling and that it happened, I took a notebook. It's actually right in my hand here. I took this notebook, and it just gave me somewhere that I could outlet. I could write whatever I wanted in this thing. I could close it up, put it somewhere only I knew about, and I could come back to it later if I wanted to. And I found a lot of power in just being able to put whatever I wanted down, outlet as hard, as loud, as big, as small as I wanted to in this thing. And just, I could read it. I could come back to it if I wanted to come back to it. I could set it on fire if I wanted to, but I could just get those thoughts out there. And I started to feel good after. I'd write these things and then I'd feel like, you know, maybe look through it a little bit and be like, whew, that, you know what? That's good. That felt great to just get that out there. And then I didn't have to listen to anybody try and fix my problem. I didn't have to listen to, you know, that, like, we all want to help, right? We all want to offer suggestion, and not everything needs a suggestion. So putting those thoughts on paper, if I wanted to share it with my wife, and I did a few times, but if I wanted to, I could. If I didn't want to, flip the page and, you know, write something else or wait till later. And this wasn't something I did every day. This is just something I did when I needed to do it, when it just got to a point where I was feeling that, you know, awful, or just needed that outlet. And I would just, you know, write it down and, you know, why can't I do this? Why can't I figure it out? You're better than this. And just, it got from a point where I was just using it to outlet and beat myself up to a place where I could write myself suggestions, or I could not answer my own problems, but at least, you know, write down if something was good, if something good happened, or something worked, if I tried something different, or just use it for what I wanted it to be and not what someone else told me it had to be. So then, as I started that journey of sobriety and of not drinking and everything else I started to work on that became my book, it was like, you know, just using that outlet to say, like, you know, I went to this function and this is what I tried to do, and this guy said this, and this, how that made me feel, and just use it as a way for me to kind of coach myself through these things I was trying to do, that coming from that generational trauma, that toxic masculine space, be man, tough, fix it yourself, where I didn't feel I could talk about it. At least I could coach myself through it. I could use what I was learning through podcasts and books and just talking to people that I meet that were in a similar wellness space, that could, you know, we could bounce some things back and forth. And then I'd keep them in this journal as a way to reflect on what had happened. And it, you know, it got to a point where there was a lot of good stuff in here. And I had a friend ask me, he's like, you know, what, you know, how's it going? I was like, oh, I could write a book. It was like, wow. Like, it was never for that intention. This was mine. And like I said, I wasn't telling anybody, but then it was like I could have used that. Like, I could have used that from the things that I was trying to, the one mindset to another, you know, that transformation of what that became. It was like, wow, like, I can't just sit on this. Like, this is something I needed. So like, and I, that was October, November. So I had another month, because my 100 days became the full year. So I started to work towards that full year, because that's never going to happen. I'm never going to have this opportunity again to be sober for an entire year. So my journal became, the 100 days became 2021 as a whole. And that journal entry, that thing that I did for myself to coach myself through all of that, became the book that I self-published to just, like I said, give back to who I used to be.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing looking back at all these things, and you just started out with, I'm frustrated, I need a change. Like, the journaling wasn't, hey, I want to write a book. It's, I know this is a practice. I'm going to see if it'll help me. And I think that's so, so frequently something we just need to, like, take that leap into is, I know this exists. I'm looking for a change. Can this help me? And see if it does. If it doesn't, look for something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about this earlier. I tried journaling. Journaling was not the thing for me, but there are so many other options in habits that it's like, what does work for you? And what may work for me may not work for you, and vice versa, right? So it's not a, hey, I'm not good at journaling. I'm a failure. It's try, right? Just like you did. And you gave yourself space to do that. I love that is like, in the midst of that frustration, you had like this space that you created. I'm going to try this. I'm frustrated because of all these things here. You're aware, right? You've got that awareness, but it's like, I'm going to try. What are some things, like, you started out with those as your habit, right? What are some other habits that you've added along the way that have helped you continue to grow into the man and the dad and the husband that you are now versus, you know, before Dry January?
Well, I didn't realize what I was doing when I started Dry January in the form of like habit structure. And when I've got a 45 minute to an hour commute to work and back every day, so I was listening to a lot of the same playlists, the same music, and I needed a better fill for that time. I thought there's a better use of this. And as I started to open up January, February, like podcasting and books, and like, that was just, wasn't for me. That was not where, like, my, you know, people around me were reading, they were talking about reading. They weren't talking about wellness. Definitely weren't talking about like personal development. And so as I started to open up and I started to work on these things, like, I didn't know anything about what I was trying to do. And when we don't, right? One thing that we need to remember, like, we're not born with all this knowledge. This person that I thought I was just the person I made up, right? That was the person I created from all the influences and everything around me that happened. And I built that person. And once I learned that I could change that person, you know, I could listen to those podcasts and I could start that journal and I could do those things. But when I started listening to more and learning more about habits and realizing that I did that 30 days. And like you said, celebrate that. And I built on it by doing another 30 days and then 100. And I started to test that theory by using small things like brushing my teeth. Was like, I was already not drinking, but I wasn't doing it for 100 days yet, even though I was counting the days and not drinking. It was like, oh, that's a cool concept. I'm going to test it. I'm not really happy with brushing my teeth. I'm going to brush my teeth twice a day. I'm going to mark the calendar. I'm going to check mark in the morning. I'm going to check mark at night, and I'm going to mark it every single day. I'm not going to miss a day. And then at 100 days, I'm going to stop keeping track and just see. So, and in there, I worked on other things like drinking more water and, you know, some form of exercise in the beginning, just walking. And I'd have like circles and scratches and X's and boxes and check marks for every little thing I was working on. And at the end of the month, I'd write however many check marks and boxes for each thing and keep track of the days. But brushing my teeth was that first one. And as I got to 100 days and, you know, tested myself by not marking it, like, I couldn't go to bed. I'd be in bed like, oh, I didn't brush my teeth yet. And I'd get up and I'd go and do it. Then the next morning, you know, I brushed my teeth before I left my house. And to this day, like, it's, I haven't marked it off in 2 years, but it is something that, like, I just can't not do now. And I've done so many things the last 3 years, just little things like that, right? Brushing my teeth or like sit-ups. I started learning about, you know, this habit structure and starting small. Well, I would just do one sit-up before bed. Just one. Like, I'd mark the calendar, however I'd do it. I think it was a, you know, a circle or a line on the thing on the calendar. It was like, you know, if I just did one, if I just sat on the board and did one, that was good. But like James Clear, Atomic Habits, like that's the hardest part, right? Is just getting to that point. So I was already sitting there. Well, I'm going to do five. I'm going to do 10. So now for the last, and I've been marketing it longer, but for the last like 300 days, I've been doing 50 every single night before bed, minimum. So it all started with just one. And even though there's things like brushing my teeth where I stopped keeping track, I felt like this one and a couple other things, I knew that I needed to keep going. I needed to keep marking it because that was more accountable. So the things that I was working on, it depended on how important it was or how like ingrained in me the habit was, or whether or not I needed more time. And I know Dr. Carolyn Leaf, in her speaking and podcast, she talks about cycles. So when I started to learn more about it, it was like, well, maybe that 100 days wasn't all I needed. Maybe I needed a 100 day cycle and I needed another 100 or so. So it was like that extra little bit I could put on something I was already doing to you know, help me get to a point where I'd be more successful with it.
Yeah. That's awesome to like learn and grow along the way. Like you've talked about, you know, you didn't start out like this, but as you went along, it's like, oh, hey, here's these other things that I can do that people around me aren't doing. When you look back at like the books that you've read, what are two to three that have been the most impactful for you to bring about this transformation that you've experienced?
I think the biggest ones are, I mentioned Atomic Habits and James Clear. And I could speak about it, that a bit more because I followed him and there's some really good stuff in there. He says, like he doesn't believe in goals. He says he doesn't believe in goals, but he believes in asking yourself better questions. You know, like would a healthy person eat this bag of cookies right now? So if you ask yourself that question, you're like, well, no, so I'm not going to eat that bag of cookies right now. Like it's just asking yourself those better questions. Would a person that doesn't drink have a drink right now? Well, no, they wouldn't. So I'm not going to do that. Like it's a way to restructure those things. So Atomic Habits was a big one for me. I really liked Carol Dweck, Mindset. A lot about the fixed mindset versus growth mindset. I found, you know, I used to be in that fixed mindset and lived in that space. So learning about that versus the other side and just kind of following the book along to a point where I could implement some of that and feel that difference. And then, there's been a lot of books that I've read, but, things like David Goggins has his two books and, you know, he is very difficult to try and keep up to, but he will motivate you. I've felt very motivated by, you know, pushing myself a bit more because, you know, I may not be able to do it to his level, but if he can do it to that level, I can push a little bit more. So, you know, there's been different books like that, or Tim Grover's, Relentless and Tim Grover Winning were very good books that I really liked. And I mean, I could go on. There's been so many. I'm looking at my bookshelf over here, but I started to learn about like Sleep Smarter, Sean Stevenson, just circadian rhythms and blue lights and all those things. So I stopped putting my phone beside the bed. And because I wake up so early to go to work, I leave it across the room, but I read every night before bed, and that was never something I did before. And a lot of this information is all, you know, from these places.
Yeah. Sean's book is super powerful, man. I just put things for me on a different level where it's like, oh, I'm doing all this stuff I probably shouldn't be. So I had some decisions and made different actions before I went to bed. Well, Sean, how can guys reach out to you outside of the podcast here?
The best place is my website, seanrobinson.ca. There's a contact page right there, and it's directly to me. So if you message me through my website, I'll definitely get it. And another place is I'm on all the social media sites. I've got a TikTok page. I'm putting out week videos a couple a week. on wellness and basically what I'm working on. So everything that I speak about is all stuff I'm working on. So it's, you know, very personal that way. And then, you know, Instagram, Facebook, I've got Going Dry pages, on all the major platforms. And like I said, same thing, just whatever I'm working on, I'm putting out for that person that, like I used to be, that can relate to it.
Yeah. Perfect. Sean, thank you, my friend, for coming on, talking about your journey, of going dry and being free from that habitual drinking, and then talking about journalism and, journaling and, also talking about like the generational trauma that we can step in and set those patterns for, and how you've changed that. I mean, you've spun it on its head, and that is fantastic, my friend. So Sean, thank you for joining me here today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. Happy to be here, and hopefully, we can chat again soon.
Absolutely, my friend. Thanks so much, my friend, for joining me on another episode. If you found the information within the show helpful, please leave a review on the platform you're listening to. It helps raise the show's visibility so other men can join us in breaking free. See you on the next episode, and remember to continue putting yourself out there. Have a great one.